You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich.
Welcome. I'm Christina Michelle, and this is Culture Rich Conversations. Our fifth season, Getting to the Roots, explores identity, culture, and belonging through the personal stories of Black hair professionals. We'll hear from a range of Alaskan community members sharing their journey, revealing how the Black experience with hair is really about the Black experience in America. So far, in Getting to the Roots, we've addressed the Black hair experience from the perspective of white parents caring for Black and biracial children, and the Black hair experience in Alaska exclusively from the female and male perspective. If you haven't heard those episodes, you can find them archived on ktoo.org and through our podcast on your favorite listening platform. Today, in our final episode in the series, we highlight the subject of cultural appropriation and explore Black hair as a symbol of survival, resilience, and celebration. I'm joined here in the studio by Dr. Nicole Jenkins, Assistant Professor of Sociology at Howard University, on fellowship at Harvard University, and zooming in from Massachusetts. Welcome, Dr. Jenkins.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. So let's lay the foundation with a term that our listeners are probably going to hear a few times in this discussion, cultural appropriation. Can you define what that term means in your own words?
Sure. Cultural appropriation is essentially taking or mimicking a culture without any recognition of where that culture comes from or the significance behind that culture.
Thank you. What Black hairstyles do you think Americans find socially acceptable in general?
Oh, great question. So here in the U.S., we have this new rendition of the natural hair movement, and we're seeing a growing acceptance of natural hairstyles and textures. However, the styles that we find to be most acceptable within mainstream America, or let's say the media, are the styles most closely related to Eurocentric beauty standards. So when we think about the curly hair, the wash and goes, you know, this is partly where I have to recognize my privilege as someone who studies natural hair. Certain lengths and textures are valued over others, and usually those styles that are closer to Eurocentric standards of beauty are more accepted. However, right, we see natural hair in commercials. We're seeing locks, you know, in media. These things are a lot different than what's happening on the ground for people in their real lives.
They're a lot different in what ways?
So when we're thinking about the media, right, we're seeing Black women wearing natural hair in commercials and on TV, and we see celebrities. This is actually something that I write about in my upcoming book. But, you know, while that's great, there is this paradox in the actual experiences of Black women who are wearing their natural hair to work or to school. So you have this celebration within the media, but in I'll use air quotes here, real life, right? Real Black women who are going to work might get sent home, or they don't get that promotion, or maybe it's a job interview where, you know, that's not acceptable. That's not professional here, right? So that's very different. You know, that celebration on TV looks very different from reality. I think we can even go a step further, right? We've heard celebrities who are, you know, brave enough and using their platform to highlight natural hair and, you know, beauty outside of Eurocentric standards. We've heard these celebrities say, yeah, I've showed up and there's no one to do my hair. There's no one to do my makeup. You know, so here they are trying to use their platform, trying to wear their natural hair. But they too are in part of a paradox where media is saying, yeah, go ahead and do that. Yeah, natural hair, let's do it. It's popular right now. But you go ahead and do that yourself. We don't have anyone, you know, here for you, but you get it done, right? So it's very interesting. You know, it is complex, the ways that natural hair is accepted here in the U.S.
Can you tell us what led you to start studying natural hair? And is it something that you've done in a formal capacity, or is it for, has it been for your own personal hair journey?
Sure. So I grew up in Southern California in a primarily white rural desert town. The name of the town is Ridgecrest, for those who want to pinpoint it on that. But growing up, I was one of very few folks of color, let alone Black people in my town. And I experienced a lot of, you know, which now, then I didn't have the language, right? But now, like, microaggressions and just overt racism, discomfort around my hair. And when I reached grad school, it was something that I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn about other women's experiences and what that meant, right? I realized that there are experiences outside of my own, and I just want to better understand. So I've studied natural hair in a professional capacity since graduate school, which was 2016. So I did my dissertation in a African braiding and weaving salon, where I spent 2 years just listening to women working in that shop. And just trying to figure out all the nuances. And this is why I can very confidently say it's very complicated, you know, and really, while there's a lot of overlap in how Black women are experiencing their natural hair, as well as men and children, right? We as Black people are not a monolith. This also complicates it. You know, what is my experience is not necessarily someone else's. But it is a very important conversation, and I'm glad that folks are having it more openly and in the public and learning. It's very important.
Have you personally ever experienced discrimination because of the way that you chose to wear your hair?
Oh, great question. So I imagine, you know, that this could have happened to me without me knowing, mm-hmm. right? We're not always going to know. Someone is True. Not going to say, I'm not hiring you because your hair is like that, right? So there very well could have been situations where I was kind of counted out based on those choices. But I have had many a comment, a situation regarding my hair. Even, you know, for the people that I love or care about, I have laid witness to uncomfortable situations. As a kid, you know, this is a story that I share also in my work. As a kid, I would let people touch my hair. I didn't have really any other context. It had happened from, you know, childhood to all the way up. So I actually didn't have that boundary. You know, people just would reach out, oh my goodness, your hair, you know, and it just kind of was what it was. I had a situation in graduate school where this happened, right? A non-Black person was like, oh my goodness, your hair today. Can I touch your hair? And I just kind of shrugged, like, sure, you know. And after class, I had a friend of mine, another non-Black person, but a person of color, who came to check on me and was like, hey, I saw that, you know, where that woman had asked you if she could touch her hair. How did you feel about it, right? And I was like, it was just what it was. That's happened to me since I was a kid. And, you know, people just do that. And she said, but they don't have to. And you don't have to allow it. You know, it's okay to say, no, you don't have to do that. You know, and you can let them too. This is your body and your choice, of course, right? But I just wanted to check on you because you seem so defeated, like, okay, fine. You know, it wasn't a comfortable situation. It made me uncomfortable. So I just wanted to check on you. And in that moment, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, like this is just something that has happened to me for so long that I just thought it was normal, and it's not, you know? And it's even more complex because I had the boundary for, I'm a mother. I have an 11-year-old son and many other children that I care for. I'm a bonus mom too. but when my son was very young, I remember being in a grocery store line. He was like on the hip, right? He had to be like maybe 9 months old or something. And I remember this woman, non-Black woman, white woman, reaching over. It almost happened in slow motion where she was like reaching for his hair. And I immediately just dove back and like moved my son out of the way before she could touch. And she said, oh, his hair was just so, I just had to touch, you know? Wow. And I said, you should control yourself because, you know, when you react, you know, other people are going to react, you know, and I would have had to do something. So you should try to control yourself in situations like that. That's not appropriate. So it's complicated, right? Like I had the mentality for my child,
right,
that layer of protection and that boundary, but you know, for myself for so long, I didn't, you know? So again, like these, what my story is different from someone else's, but what we can agree on is one, it's complex, and two, this is something that matters. It's very important. It's very real what's happening in folks' lives and experiences.
Nicole, why do you think that some people who are not in the Black community have such a hard time understanding our hair history and the boundary that we have around not wanting our hair to be touched?
That's a great question. And one, you know, I think I struggle with myself because it seems so obvious, right? In my experience where it's like, okay, it seems like this would be something that folks would recognize. But I think that it gets normalized in certain situations like mine, right? Like growing up where it's like, oh, that's okay. And that's normal, right? When it's not. So one, it can get normalized. I think there is this superiority complex, right? Like almost like you do an adult to a child, right? Oh, I can pat you on the head because you're just a little kid, right? But you wouldn't do that to an adult because you realize that there are equal power dynamics there, right? You don't pat another adult on the head. But when you feel that you have more power than someone else, you essentially like sun them, right? Like you put them in situations that demonstrate that. And I think that without even recognizing it, this is a power play. Oh, let me just reach out and touch your hair, right? White folks do not do that to one another, right? Like if you have spent time to sit here and curl your hair and, you know, do all the things to, you know, beautify yourself, are you going to go out and like touch your other white friend's hair that she just spent all this time doing? Like
probably
you wouldn't.
Not yet.
You know, so I think that there, it's a power thing. Additionally, there is a lack of kind of education and knowledge around, this is why I said I was so excited to be here, because the more we have these conversations, especially within the media and public platforms, like the more people can hear a conversation that says, oh, I actually never thought about that. A lot of the times when we hold power and privilege, we're not thinking about the instances where other people don't.
That's right.
You know, it's just, unless you are conscious and it's work that you're trying to do, you know, ignorance is bliss.
Well, if you are just tuning in, I'm Christina Michelle and I'm here with Dr. Nicole Jenkins. We're having a conversation about cultural appropriation and the Black hair experience. We are going to take a quick break and we will continue the conversation when we return. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Culture Rich Conversations is supported by Mark Stofa and Sarah Hannon, celebrating Juneau's diversity of culture, language, and heritage. And by grants from the Social Justice Fund Grant Program of the Alaska Community Foundation, the Alaska Humanities Forum, and the National Endowment for the Humanities, a federal agency. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities.
The Black Awareness Association would like to take a moment to recognize that Culture Rich Conversations is broadcast from Thlinkit Ani. We acknowledge those families who made use of this land and waterways for thousands of years and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and future generations. Gunalshish, thank you.
You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich.
Welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle, and I am here today having a conversation about cultural appropriation. And I am joined in the studio by Dr. Nicole Jenkins, who is an assistant professor of sociology at Howard University. So continuing this conversation, Nicole, can you talk to us about how hairstyles have been symbols of identity, heritage, and even resistance throughout history?
Oh, certainly. Specifically, you know, talking about the Black community and folks within the African diaspora, hair has been culturally significant since, you know, as long as we have historical records. In African countries specifically, you could tell a person's socioeconomic status, whether or not they were married, all different types of things about them based on their hairstyle, what tribe, you know, they were from. And these things were stripped away, right? When we're thinking about chattel slavery and folks being uprooted and moved, many of the hair rituals that were in place, including, you know, hair care products. So, from the seeds and berries and plants that were used to the tools, right? Even just the tools used to maintain the health of the hair, these things were kind of stripped away, right? So this is kind of a blend of the cultural and historical significance of hair. And then thinking about on an identity and personal level, these things move into contemporary society very easily. They're still so applicable. When we think about the way somebody wears their hair, right, it could determine a whole day. And as Black women and Black people, these are real conversations we're having with our family and friends, like, okay, I have this job interview. What do you think? Should I do this or should I do this? Right. This is real time and energy and strategy that goes into how we are wearing our hair. We have so much versatility. I mean, it is, yes, there's planning, right?
But thinking strategy, also, man.
Yes, so strategy, but also thinking about like your identity and what it means to you. There is so much. I mean, scholars have been able to tap into the emotional connection that folks feel when they have a level of confidence about them and wearing a particular hairstyle, right? But there's two sides to that coin. So when you're made to feel inferior or unpretty, right, or that you're not accepted in particular spaces based on your hairstyles and textures, right, that is equally detrimental to a person's confidence. So there is a lot that goes into the connection between how we're feeling about ourselves and how we are, you know, able, right, really to wear our hair in public spaces.
So in light of all of that history, what are your thoughts around white people wearing styles that are traditionally known as Black people hairstyles? So the cornrows, the braids, even going into locks and things like that.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So don't get upset with me, Christina. I'm going to say again that
I'm
so
putting you on the spot.
I think that it is. And I think that, you know, while I generally understand I'm a sociologist, right? I understand the cultural and historical significance, and there's a double standard. Mm. This is where the problem lies for me, right? And, you know, I think for a lot of scholars is there's a double standard that exists when there's this eroticized, you know, presentation of self mimicking Black hairstyles and textures, where in one instance, it's fashion, right? You have the white woman on the runway with cornrows, and that's so high fashion. But when a Black woman wears cornrows to work, she's now unprofessional, right? So it is the double standard that really makes it problematic. And it really emphasizes things like oppression, right, for Black people. I personally do not have a problem with non-Black people wearing a hairstyle. It's not something that gets me fired up. Right. Mm-hmm. My issue is more around understanding the culture and historical significance behind wearing that hairstyle. Right. Making sure that if you're wearing cornrows, you're saying I'm wearing this Black hairstyle. Right. Did you know that Black women used to put seeds in these cornrows?
That's
how,
right.
You know, it was also a map. Right? Like this is why, you know, understanding the culture and significance behind it, also understanding the oppression, your privilege, right? Being able to say, when I wear these cornrows, it's okay. But when she wears them, it's not, that's not okay. So you have to really respect the culture, right? And I think that this is part of, you know, the problem for me. I grew up in California. We talked about this already. And growing up, my mother would cornrow my hair for school, but then my friends would want cornrows, right? So I had the non-Black friends that were wearing the cornrows that were coming over to my house to get their hair braided. So I've seen a lot of times, again, it's not something that bothers. That's not the bother. The bother is, do you understand your privilege? Do you know where the hair comes from? Do you understand what Black people are going through when they wear these hairstyles? If not, then you probably shouldn't be doing what you're doing.
Yeah. I almost think of it like being a member of a society or an organization or something that you, well, maybe like a sorority or something where like you have paid your dues, you've put in your blood, sweat and tears to be, this means something to you. And then you see somebody else rocking, you know, the colors or the sweatshirt or something. And you're like, you don't even know what went into being able to identify with this. And it can be offensive.
I can definitely see how it's offensive. And I was, when I saw, you know, when in thinking about this question, I'm like, okay, so is it just don't do it? Mm. Right. So you're not in the sorority. So right. you can't the walk with it. Okay.
Right.
Or is it, how do they do it? Right. Okay. So if I do want to wear the hairstyle, what is the appropriate way? How do I recognize the culture? How do I recognize the history? And I think I really struggled with that, and probably because I'm not a non-Black person.
Right.
It's not my work to figure out how they're supposed to be able to make other people feel good. And what I'm comfortable with, other Black folks might not be comfortable with that. So I can't even give, you know, an appropriate solution to. So again, it is very complicated, but I think that it's something that white folks, non-Black folks should be conscious of, you know, that recognizing, hey, when I go and I wear this hairstyle, not only is it hold historical, cultural, political,
right.
Significant for Black people, but it is probably going to offend some of them with me doing. You got to be aware. Everyone has choice. You can do whatever you want with your own body, but I think that awareness is really important, very crucial.
So what would you say to the white person that says, well, what about Black people wearing straight blonde hair? Or, you know, trying to emulate what our hair looks like.
That is really interesting. I think that I would probably not entertain a white person who said that to me. But I think, you know, but what I really think is Black folks had to adopt those strategies as a means of survival. And they're still having to adopt those strategies as a means of survival.
Absolutely.
Those decisions impact their socioeconomic status, their ability to elevate within their career, how comfortable somebody feels being in the same room with them just based off of their hairstyle. You know, these are, I have heard some of the most, you know, some of the strangest stories, right? Alarming stories from Black women where it's like, oh, you know, I had to wear my hair straight because I didn't want to make anybody feel uncomfortable. Like, these are real conversations we have with one another, depending on the context of the situation, where it is, what it is we're doing, that I think that non-Black people may not be privy to. They don't understand how much work goes behind, you know, these decisions and how we have to kind of think so much about how our double consciousness, right? How we're making other people feel just by existing.
Nicole, can you talk to us about the Crown Act?
Absolutely. So the Crown Act is current legislation currently being implemented state by state that protects against discrimination of wearing natural hairstyles and textures in places of employment and education and some federal circumstances as well. The Crown Act was put up to the Senate floor to be a federal law at the end of 2023, I believe December 2023, and it did not make it through. So again, we're currently going state by state. However, in 2024, the Crown Act is being reconsidered to be federal law. So if it were federal law, right, we wouldn't have to go state by state by state, which is exhausting, unnecessary. It is a lot, not unnecessary in the fact that it doesn't need to be done, right? But it the fact that we even need a law to be able to protect people in 2024 to be able to wear natural hairstyles and textures to work in school is just ridiculous. So I'm hoping, you know, we can see some progress with that.
What more do you think needs to be done for those of us in the Black community to feel safe and confident in freely wearing our natural hairstyles?
Oh my goodness, what an excellent question. Thinking about the Crown Act, specifically, we can do more with the Crown Act because, I mean, federal protection is needed. We can't leave it into the hands of the state. The reason, I mean, we have a real example of this with Daryl George, right? He's a teenager who was attending high school in Texas, wearing locks, and ended up being suspended for a violation of dress code. Texas is a state that is protected by the Crown Act. And Mr. George was not awarded victory in his case, even in a state protected by the Crown Act. Like, what, you know, that's extremely disheartening for folks who are trying to make strides within the natural hair community, within, you know, surrounding protections for natural hairstyles and textures. What does a situation like that reveal to the Black community? You know, so we definitely need some more solid federal protection. I think people in the Black community could. I worry about division. You know, folks within the Black community, we have this beautiful versatility, right? Versatility is something that should be celebrated. We shouldn't be out here judging people for however they choose to wear their hair. We're literally trying to stop that. We're trying to stop the, you know, non-Black folks from policing us. So we cannot one another from within, right? We need to be able to allow people autonomy, you know, and respect for how they want to wear their hair. I say that because there is a lot of, you know, sometimes I get questions like, well, what do you think about women who wear weaves and wigs? I'm like, I'll wear a weave and a wig in a minute. You know, within the natural hair community, the main consensus is around hair health.
Right.
It's not really about, you know, we want to be versatile. Sometimes you might want to, you know, do slick down bob,
yeah.
Right? Or bust down, you know, 14, you know, however, right? We have options here, so we don't want to isolate people. I think an emphasis on health should really be the consensus. And then, you know, making sure that we're not recycling these narratives around like, oh, she doesn't look put together because that's too this or too that. It's too short, too kinky, too whatever, too, everyone is different, right? Please do not start putting people in boxes because again, all we're doing is feeding the fire of white supremacy when we do that.
That's so interesting because previous conversation I had mentioned how the generations have perceived the natural hair care movement. And it came up because I was talking about my grandfather, who's 87 years old. He was born in the 30s. And when he sees my hair natural, he has a strong reaction to it. It's not positive. You know, and there's kind of a shaming around it, like Chrissy's hair isn't done. You know, what's going on? And I was wondering what your thoughts are about that. Have you ever noticed or thought about how the depending on your generation, how that affects your thoughts on natural hair?
Absolutely. So sorry about the experience, Chrissy, but this is actually something that comes up a lot in my research. Mm. I noticed that, you know, generationally, I interview women about their natural hair experiences, but I often get volunteer stories from men as well. But there is this theme of folks with an older generations sort of policing the younger generation. Of why didn't you comb your hair? Why are you choosing to wear that? And just questioning or just being negative. Really many women who choose to go on a natural hair journey, do a big chop or, you know, those sorts of things have received comments from grandparents, aunties, maybe even parents that are urging them, you know, to please go straighten your hair or do some or get the wig, get the, but I think that a lot of it is, you know, there's this historical significance. We already talked about, you know, conforming to Eurocentric standards of beauty was a protective element, right? So this was something that could get you into that category of just maybe even white passing for some people, which was protection and safety. And it meant a lot of different things than it does today. Right. But we're still seeing, right, with the Crown Act that, you know, in one breath, they are things are different. Times are different. But in the same breath, they're trying to protect you. Right. They're saying what doesn't get said out loud,
right,
you know, which is more a lot more of a microaggression these days, but based on their experiences.
I love that. And I love thinking of it from the perspective of, like, with my grandfather, for example, it's protection. He's looking at his granddaughter like, you know, you're going to have better opportunities if you get your hair together. Like, he's got this whole narrative in the back of his mind that I don't hear. What I hear is what happened to your hair.
Exactly.
So, yeah, thank you so much, Nicole. How can we foster greater empathy and respect for the cultural significance of Black hair, in your opinion?
Sure. I think greater empathy is actually something I'm working on in my current book project, is tapping into the emotional significance of natural hair for Black people, recognizing that it is something that is more than just a decision. Right? It is something that impacts our lives in so many different ways. So I'm trying to connect emotions and gather the stories so that folks can better relate. I think when we hear a story, we can, well, we work hard, right, to find ourselves in that story. And I think that that would provide a level of empathy. At least that is my hope. When people hear these stories from women, you know, from their childhood and up, experiencing, you know, not just experiences of discrimination that can incite these really horrific memories and traumas, but also I'm capturing stories of joy and celebration. And I think when people recognize how much confidence and love and celebration can happen, you know, just from an ability to be free, not feel policed or boxed in or have to conform to a certain style based on, you know, the way your hair naturally grows out of your head, I think that that will also provide a level of empathy for folks as well. But just, you know, being more open to understanding, hearing these narratives and learning, really.
Nicole, what's the title of your book?
So it is tentatively entitled Twisted Entanglements, Navigating the Paradox of Sisterhood and Systems of Oppression in Black Beauty Spaces.
Wow, we love that. And when is it expected to come out, and how can we find out when it does?
I will definitely be shouting it from the rooftops when it's available. I'm currently in the writing process. I just signed a contract with Princeton University Press. So it is in progress right now. So trust me, everyone will know when it is available.
Okay. And is there a way that people can reach you? Do you do your social media? Do you share that or email or anything like that?
Okay, sure. Folks can reach me on my website. It is www.nikkidesree.com. That's D-E-Z-R-E-A. I'm also Nikki Desree, at Nikki Desree on Instagram, N-I-C-K-I-E-D-E-Z-R-E-A. I'm also on LinkedIn, and my email is nicole.jenkins@howard.edu.
Awesome. Nicole, tell us about the research project that you're currently working on.
Oh, sure. So this is a really exciting project I've been working on for a couple of years now. It's called Global Crowns. And essentially, I'm capturing narratives and stories from Black women in different parts of the world about their experiences wearing natural hair. And I'm collecting both positive and negative stories. So it's not just about discrimination, also about celebration. The project does use some really advanced AI technologies for collecting and analyzing the data. It was featured in Nature magazine for that. And some of the countries include, you know, I'll collect data in Havana, Cuba, Paris, France. I will also visit Burundi, as well as Brazil and a number of other locations. So those are just a few, but that is the project.
Wow. And what led to you beginning this project? It's so fascinating.
Well, thank you so much. So I had mentioned that I did 2 years of research in an African braiding and weaving salon, a natural hair salon. And essentially, that project was supposed to capture these stories. But the type of research that I do is called ethnography. And you spend extended amounts of time. I said it was 2 years, but even in a day, it could be, you know, anywhere from 1 hour to 8 hours. So I'm collecting field notes extensively, and you have to go through a process called coding, where the themes of that research come out. And the themes of my research were not actually the really much around hair conversations. Women were talking a lot more about motherhood and even just identity politics between, you know, U.S. born women in the African diaspora versus women from West African countries. So there was a different story to be told in my first research project. So it's an extension of the first one, but also trying to bring in elements of globalization, transnational feminism. A lot of the times here in the U.S., We're so preoccupied with our own experiences that we're not really realizing that, you know, similar to anti-Blackness, which is a global phenomenon, you know, are many of the struggles that happen within the African diaspora. So I wanted to make it a larger conversation, including all women within the African diaspora.
Wow.
Or as many as.
That's incredible. And where can we find the project? Where can we see it?
You can actually participate in the study through my website. It's www.nikkiedesree.com. That's NikkiedesreA, under the tab Global Crowns. So I do collect data online so folks can participate that way, or they could email me and we could do a interview as well.
Okay, and who qualifies to participate in the project?
So women or women-identified folks are the folks who can participate in the study, and folks who are part of the African diaspora. So those, and lastly, 18 and older.
Okay.
So those are the three type criteria: identifying as a woman, identifying as a person within the African diaspora, and being 18 years and older.
Excellent. Global Crowns. We will definitely be checking it out.
Nicole,
as we close today, is there anything else that you would like to add that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about?
Oh, I just want to thank you all so much for giving, you know, voice and recognition to these very important conversations on using your platform to do so. So this has been great. Thank you so much, Christina.
Of course. Thank you for joining us. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with a post-show wrap-up and Today in Black History. You're back with Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle, bringing in DJ Al Boogie to wrap up today's show. Boogie, you're here on the board doing the engineering and taking all of this conversation in. What's your take on today's show?
I like today's show because it touched on everything about the series that everyone was talking about, and she attacked it from a professional standpoint. I also like her journey and that she's actually taken a step forward to write a book about it, travel, and ask questions about how people feel about hair all over the world. So that was one of the biggest things I took from it, and I really can't wait for her book to come out.
Yeah, I did think it was interesting that she's broadening up this conversation. It's not just about the black hair experience in Alaska, like we've been talking about, or even in the United States, but there are women all over the world who have stories to tell that are similar to ours, and I can't wait to hear them as well. One of the things that stuck out to me was her perspective on when someone touches a black person's hair. So this is something that came up in a lot of episodes in the series, and her take on it with it being a power play or stemming from a superiority complex was really interesting to me. What were your thoughts on that?
She really did hit on some things about thinking about it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great. And also when you mentioned the incident with your grandfather,
yeah,
and how she spun it a different way, you know, maybe he was trying to protect you in some way.
Absolutely.
And we go our lives and we have these thoughts about people when they say things that may have hurt our feelings. And sometimes we don't look at it from every point of view. And I originally thought, you know, it's just his age, you know, he's older and things like that. But she really tapped into the fear factor,
mm-hmm.
how back in those days they had to fix their hair and try to assimilate.
Yeah, what I took away from that was assimilation was a survival technique.
Yes.
Yeah. So I am very appreciative of that different perspective, and it helped me to see him in a different light and to understand, it might not even be where he's coming from, but it's at least one take on it that keeps me from being salty about the situation.
Right.
So another thing that I appreciated was the way that she talked about the natural hair, how we're seeing more of it in commercials, but it doesn't necessarily reflect the experience that we are having in real life. Mm. And I have been thinking about that, we do see more afros, more natural hair, more locks, braids, and all of that on in the media and on commercials. Yet we're still talking about, what if I wear my natural hair to this event? What if I wear it to a interview? Am I going to get the job? So I don't know what to make of it, because on one end, it feels like we're making progress, but it doesn't actually translate to real life experience. On the other hand, it feels like maybe the fact that we are seeing more representation of natural hair in the media, we are moving in that direction, but real life hasn't quite caught up with it yet.
Right. And because she tapped into also saying, when people show up with natural hair, and the people around them are like, yeah, do that. And then they're like, okay, well, where am I going to get my hair done? And they're like, oh, you figure it out. You know, you figure it out. And I think it has to do a lot with not having enough resources and not feeling like it was that important of a conversation to have, you know, before. So I think going forward, this is going to be a great conversation. I think she's going great with the book. Any way that this can get out to the masses and more people can hear about the struggle and the everything that we've overcome so far, I think any way that they get this information is going to be great.
Something I didn't get to ask Nicole about are the Tignon laws. I have an excerpt from an article on PopSugar.com called History, Black Hairstyles, and Cultural Appropriation. And it reads, Tignon laws set the tone for the stereotyping of Black hairstyles that currently exist. In 1786, Esteban Rodriguez Miró, who was governor of what was then the Spanish-American provinces of Louisiana and Florida, passed a group of sumptuary laws, which included the Tignon laws. Sumptuary laws were historically meant to regulate consumption and access to luxury, as to reinforce social hierarchies and legitimize discrimination, meaning that it was illegal for certain types of people to wear elegant clothes or extravagant hairstyles depending on their race, gender, and socioeconomic class. Tignon laws were targeted at free women of color and made it compulsory for Black women to cover their hair in public because their intricate hairstyles were seen to threaten the social status of white women and therefore the patriarchal social order. Although the Tignon, similar to a West African head tie, was meant to be a kind of scarlet letter for free Black women's naturally coily hair, it was reappropriated as a fashion statement. I wish I could have gotten Nicole's take on this. I didn't know any of it about the Tignon laws or the sumptuary laws. And I think that it just adds even more to the argument about other cultures wearing the head wraps or hairstyles of African-American people and not understanding that we have really had to fight. I mean, even when we were wearing our own natural hair, there was a time where we were mandated to cover it up because it was a threat to white women. And so I think even more so, it's important for those who want to partake in our styles, in our head wraps and the like, that they're educated about what it really means.
Right. I didn't even know that as well. I see that head wrap everywhere, and I see a host of other people wearing them. And I think we need to be more educated. It's easy to say, to tell someone, oh, you know, you are
culturally appropriating.
Yeah, you're appropriating my culture.
Yeah.
Do you even know what your culture is about?
That's right.
Do you know how to feel about this? Do you know what that is? So I think the more important that we make it for ourselves and the more we put behind it as far as education and the more we speak out about it, it educates everyone else. And when they do decide to do these things, they will put in the work and they will, if they really want to do it and they really want to express themselves in these ways, then they will take the time and they will do the work. And if not, you put the pressure on them and then you educate them.
Well, that's what Culture Rich Conversations is all about. We're here learning and we are hopefully here educating and inspiring others as we continue on our journey. Closing the show out today with Today in Black History. We honor Ernest Nathan Morial, who made history in November 12, 1977, by becoming the first African-American mayor of New Orleans. Morial dedicated his life to fighting for equal rights. As an attorney and leader of the NAACP chapter from 1962 to 1965, he championed the integration of buses and schools. His efforts to establish hiring quotas for Black workers led to an increase in their employment percentage from 40% in 1977 to 53% in 1985. Before his passing in 1989, Morial served two terms as mayor of New Orleans and was succeeded by his son, Mark Morial, who carried on his father's legacy. Thank you for listening today, and as always, we'd love to hear your feedback. Our email address is junobaa@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook by searching BAA Juno. Today's show concludes our series, Getting to the Roots, Our Hair Has a Story. If you missed the other five episodes, you can hear them on ktoo.org. They are archived there, or you can access them through our podcast, which you can find on your favorite listening platform. Today's show was produced by Natasha Boozer and Angel Collins. May your life be blessed and flow with ease. I'm Christina Michelle. This is Culture Rich Conversations.
Welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. This has been an amazing conversation with Nikki. And now I am bringing in the Culture Rich Conversations team to do a post-show wrap-up. And we're also going to just kind of summarize how this whole series has gone and what it's meant to us. So joining me in the studio now is Al Boogie. And we have Jordan Lewis, Angel Collins, and Natasha Boozer. So welcome back, everybody.
Nice to be back in the studio.
Happy to be here.
I haven't left.
Wondering if we can share why this was so important to each one of us, because we're on the other end of this really cool idea that we had a couple months ago to do six episodes exclusively on the hair journey for African-American people, Black people, textured hair care journey. In the beginning, I know that there were some people who wondered if there was enough content for us to cover six episodes, and we've done that. I would love for us to share why this was important to us in the first place. Like, how did this come about?
Thank you so much for asking. I think, you know, when you and I sat down a few months ago to talk about the beginning of season five, the story of our hair became this sort of theme that we couldn't get out of our heads. And so I know for me, the reason that I wanted to do the episode or the episodes and this theme was, I think our hair is a big part of the Black lived experience, whether you're in Alaska or anywhere where you live. And so I think breaking it down the way that we did and showing how it's a big part of our identity, a part of our culture, a part of how we're feeling that day, I think that it made a big difference and it was very powerful to begin the series in that way.
Yeah, for me, it was really an opportunity for me to truly feel like I'm engaging in my culture more. You know, for me growing up, I didn't really get to do that very often. I spent most of my time growing up, you know, with my mom and in predominantly white spaces. And so for me, it was always just like, okay, I'm kind of here. I'm kind of going with the flow of things. And so then having the opportunity to join the team and work on the show and really get that engagement, I'm like, oh yeah, I do have these unique experiences to talk about with how it's been having my hair and being able to share that with other people and be like, okay, so it isn't just me. I've not been in this little pocket by myself going along this little journey. There's everyone else around me. And that's super helpful, I think.
Thank you, Jordan and Angel.
For me, it was about understanding the importance of Black hair in general to help people understand, you know, what we do actually have to go through in order to be, quote unquote, presentable in the workplace. You know, like having people understand how hard it is to navigate hair issues when the area that you're in doesn't necessarily care for your hair. because there aren't as many of you around. So, you know, like just letting people understand that, you know, we're working with what we have. If more can be available, great. And we're still going to do the thing, and we're still going to make our hair fabulous because we have the tools.
Thanks, Angel. And Al, how about yourself?
Yes. So it's important to me because, well, right now I don't have any hair, but I have daughters, and it's really important for me to be well-rounded, a well-rounded dad.
What are some of our favorite moments and things that stood out to us, the professional show, the Hair Care Professionals? I thought it was really insightful. And one comment that I got from somebody pretty much like an hour after that episode aired, she texted me and said, I never thought about how our hairdressers are here with us through every part of our life. Like they're here for the good, they're here for the bad, they're here, they're doing our hair for the funerals, they're doing our hair for the weddings, you know, and that was enlightening for her. And then also that the way that our hair, whether you have textured hair or natural hair or fine hair, whatever your hair is like, that for it to be healthy, it starts on the inside. So it's about caring for yourself. It's about staying hydrated. It's always going to be more about what you put inside of your body than what you put on your hair. And I think that that's a message that we all can carry with us.
I think the most memorable moment for me has to go to Al describing the fresh air camp in our first episode.
Oh my God.
Simply because it's one of those things where I'm like, I can imagine like in the moment, you don't think about it as much. And as soon as you pull yourself out of it, you're like, some of these things don't quite add up, quite, right?
Last question here as we close. What do you hope our listeners got out of this series? Like, what message do you want them to take away?
I think the big thing that I would want, you know, our listeners to take away from this show is just knowing that, you know, hey, be you. That's really the biggest thing, I think, for me, is be yourself. Yes. Enjoy your hair for what it is. Have fun with it. Experiment as much as you want. And just know we'll all be here to cheer you on in the background or however you need help. That's the big way I think of it.
Natasha?
I think for me, I want our listener to take away that our hair does have a story. It can be good stories. It can be sad stories, but they all are make up who we are as individuals in the, you know, in the Black community or in the textured hair community. And I hope that the next time they have a question, maybe they'll reference these episodes. Maybe we answer some of the questions. I think it's so important that people can see how important Black hair or textured hair is to people of color. It's so important. You can tell how we're feeling that day. We can tell if we're on a journey or not. And true, that being accepted in more circles and more places only draws us closer and educates us more about the Black community. So yeah, I hope they take that away.
Thank you, Natasha. Angel?
So for me, what I hope people came away with is an understanding that they are not alone with their hair care, that there is an importance to paying attention, especially if you are working with a child or whatever that has textured hair, and that there is a benefit. Even when hair can be difficult, there's still a benefit and a pride to be had in, you know, understanding your heritage, caring for your hair.
This concludes the final episode of Getting to the Roots. Our hair has a story. Thank you for listening today. And as always, we'd love to hear your feedback. Our email address is junobaa@gmail.com. You can also find us on today's show was produced by Natasha Boozer and Angel Collins. And until the beginning of our next series, which is coming soon, may your life be blessed and flow with ease. I'm Christina Michelle. This has been Culture Rich Conversations.